Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world.
Hello.
It's the Ron Kelly Show.
Hey, yeah.
The news you want.
Is the perception still that a black man with a gun is a criminal?
With the topics you need.
Marching might have been good for back in the day, but what kind of effectiveness is marching have on society today?
The Ron Kelly.
Black males 18 to 24 years old have the highest homicide offending rate.
4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 1 p.m. Pacific. It's the Ron Kelly Show.
So don't get it twisted. Get it twisted.
On blogtalkradio.com.
Oh, yes, we are definitely going to have to change that. Good Sunday morning, everybody, and welcome. It's the debut of the Ron Kelly Show back on Sunday mornings, 10 a.m., right here on blogtalkradio.com. The website address is the official website of the show, I should say, is www.theronkellyshow.com. Go on over there and you can click on it and you can find out about the history of the show, the program, my background. There's pictures of former guests and co-hosts and et cetera. And the greatest thing about it is the Ron Kelly Show merchandise store. You can purchase merchandise emblazoned with the Ron Kelly Show logo. So do take part of that. And when you purchase a piece of something from the Ron Kelly Show merchandise store, you're letting everybody know that you are well informed because you listen to the Ron Kelly Show. All right, everybody. And also the Facebook, my Facebook page is the Ron Kelly Show going over there. 5,400 and some odd folks have already partaken of that. I thank you so much, everybody, for those likes. And, it, of course, on Twitter, it's the Ron Kelly Show. All right, everybody. We'll be joined in a little bit by Lamont Gates, the host of Real Social Talk. We'll be talking about the proliferation of gangs in Paterson, and not just necessarily in Paterson, New Jersey, where we are near, but in urban areas, period. But for right now, we're joined by a blast from the past here, my former co-host from many moons ago. I'd like to welcome back to the program Pat Wilder. Hello, Pat. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Ron Kelly. Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here with you this morning.
It's great to have you here. Patricia, I'm not used to the Pat. I've always called you Patricia, and Pat would be the easiest way to go, but I've always said Patricia. And we'll be talking about the gangs in Paterson as soon as Lamont comes along. But, you know, I was on my way. I just went out to breakfast, and I was on my way back home, Patricia, and I heard that a healthcare worker that was treating the gentleman who died from Ebola in Texas has now been diagnosed with Ebola. Let's talk about this Ebola thing for a second, which is scaring the country. And in the reports, now they haven't said who she is, as far as I know, but they have said that she was wearing protective gear and she still got it. So that's going to send a chill down all the healthcare workers, the Army Rangers and healthcare people who have been sent to West Africa by President Obama to try to ward off this crisis. So, you know, it kind of looks like there's not going to be a whole lot they can do with this Ebola thing, especially after the reports are that this person had full protective gear and got it anyway. You know,
yeah, it's
so,
certainly it's a very scary thing that's happening, you know, in the world, this Ebola, and from the young man even who died from it, who went to the hospital and was sent back home, and ended up dying from that, as well as I heard as well, the person who works at the hospital, who's now being diagnosed with that. And then you have people all over the world that are really concerned about this disease that has come out of nowhere, you know, and is, you know, threatening the lives and has taken the life of one person I know for sure. But there was even a young man talking this morning. He works in the airport. And part of his concern was that personnel there, you know, is not giving them any guidance or direction with dealing with, you know, I guess he's a baggage handler. So they're not being told what to do, you know. So his concern is, you know, if I don't go into work, I could lose my job. But I'm also fearful. So the fear is definitely running rampant, and people really do have a legitimate concern when you hear something that has come out of nowhere, you know, and it's life-threatening.
Yeah, and speaking of the airports, there was a union, a faction of the airport workers that did leave the job for 24 hours in protest, protesting the lack of safety protocols when it comes to folks coming in from West Africa. Now, the president has stopped short of banning flights from West Africa, which many of the Fox News folks, you know how they are, the Fox News, the right wing, I like to call the kook fringe right wing, have called for the banishment of all flights in from West Africa, which the president has resisted so far. But, you know, that might be something that he may have to explore. I mean, you know, people are going to cry racism and stuff, but he's going to have to. Hold on a second, Patricia. Let me bring in Lamont Gates. I believe Lamont Gates is here. Lamont Gates, the host of Real Social Talk, and who I have dubbed the unflappable one. Lamont Gates is joining us right now. Hello, Lamont. How are you?
How you doing, Ron? I'm doing great.
All right, Lamont. We just were, we were talking about, you know, I was telling Patricia Wilder is here as well, my former co-host, the Ron Kelly Morning Show up at William Patterson University, your alma mater, Lamont.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir, your alma mater. And I was explaining to her that you had a program there. She's like, who's Lamont Gates? Well, now you know. Okay. And
that's
I was on my way home, and they had about me too. Who was that, Ron Kelly? Anyway, we were talking a little bit about the Ebola crisis before we got into our gang segment of the program. And also later on, everybody will be talking about the first 100 days of Newark Mayor Ross Baraka's term in office, which folks are already looking to burn Ross Baraka at the stake already after only 100 days. Because people want instant results, but we'll talk about that a little bit later on. But Lamont, we were talking about the Ebola crisis, and I was on my way home from breakfast this morning, and I heard on the news that someone who was treating the gentleman who passed away from Ebola, who went to the doctor, who was sent home, now I'm hearing one of the people who was treating him has now contracted the virus, and the reports are that they had full protective gear on, and they were still able to get it. So I was saying to Patricia a little bit earlier, it's going to cause that's going to have a ripple effect now on all the folks who work in hospitals. And it's going to be, I guess at some point, they're going to go back to the old leper colonies from years and years ago. What are your thoughts, Lamont?
Well, I did hear that story. It took place down in Texas, if I'm not mistaken. There was a nurse's assistant who contracted the Ebola virus after complaining of fevers. Of course, they did preliminary tests and showed that she did indeed have the virus. What one specialist said was the reasoning as to how she contracted this, even with the protective gear on, was not the fact that it got through the gear, but while she was removing the gear, some way, shape, or form, she contracted it by taking the gear off. They say you have to be very careful when removing this particular gear. You have to remove it slowly and carefully. They say there's no one else that helps you remove the gear. You have to do it yourself. So even that, you know, these medical professionals have to take precautions just putting on gear and taking off gear. That's how serious and, you know, obviously how contagious this thing can be.
Yeah, and the other story, and the other part of that too, Lamont, is that if the diagnosis is confirmed, which I believe it has been, it will be the first known case of the disease being contracted and or transmitted, you know, in the U.S. And people are talking about, you know, what was the name of the movie that derived from the video game where everybody, you know, the whole world was, you know, we have movies where they talk about the whole world being infected by some virus and everybody dying off, and folks are already talking about that. I think that's a little early to be speaking like that, but I forget the name of the movie. I've seen all three or four segments of it.
You're probably talking about Resident Evil, some sort of
Resident Evil, section. Right. Yeah. Resident Evil, where the whole world had died from this virus, and only several people were left. And then I even heard someone. I mean, it's getting so some of the assertions are getting so ridiculous. I heard someone say that that someone died from Ebola and actually came back to life. I heard someone, it wasn't a news report, but I actually heard someone say that. I guess
probably
some
Pentecostal church, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, Lamont, you have a love affair with the church. So it's scary, 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 scary. And, you know,
what I don't like also, Ron, don't mean to cut you off, but...
No, go ahead.
You spoke about Fox News earlier, and instead of really discussing the issues of the Ebola virus, a lot of their commentators, what they're doing is reverting it right back to attacking the president. You know, you can't have a serious situation happen in this country and have Fox News talk about the situation without trying to throw some sort of slash at the president. You know, it's his fault. He's the one. He should be stopping the flights. He should be doing X, Y, Z. He's not doing this. He's not doing that. You know, he just doesn't get a break no matter what the situation or the outcome is, even if it's beyond his control.
There's a tornado in Oklahoma. Let's blame the president. There was a flood in Mississippi. Oh, Obama did it. Everything is a conspiracy against the president. It's just sad,
right.
Indeed.
Instead of accurately educating people on Ebola and how not to, how not to panic, you know, what its symptoms are and things of that nature, how it's transmitted, you know, it's let's attack the president.
Yeah, well, that's another show, Lamont, because also I'm going to be talking about that in upcoming programs, that they're trying to revive Mitt Romney from the dead and put him back up there because they know that there are no other Republican candidates that are viable enough to defeat Hillary Clinton. So they're A, attacking Hillary Clinton now before she even declares, and B, they're doing an autopsy on Mitt Romney to see if he can come back from the dead and run for the presidency again. So it's going to be very interesting in the next couple of years. But we let's get to our what we were going to talk about, based the program on, Lamont, the article that you posted in, on Facebook about the proliferation of gangs in Patterson. Were you doing research on that, and what prompted you to put that up on the web there?
Well, Ron, I'm always doing research on that, and what prompted me was the numerous numbers of articles that I go through on my news feed on Facebook. You know, I have a number of people that I'm friends with in Patterson, New Jersey, and a number of these people usually post the same articles or articles written by different sources that are talking about the same things, and article after article, you're hearing about violence on Rosa Parks Boulevard, a man shot on Governor Street, and so on and so forth. So I happen to be looking through, I believe, a search engine like Yahoo News. I was looking for a particular story to get another side of it, and I came across this article that was written in 1964 by a writer by the name of Fred Powlich, and he happened to be writing on some sort of riot that broke out here in Patterson back in the year 1964 when Mayor Frank X. Graves was the mayor in the town, and the violence went on for 3 days straight. Now, it was so bad that the mayor wanted to originally contact the governor at the time and bring in state police, and the main thing about this whole thing was that there was no real reason as to why this riot started. All through that article, I'm looking and I'm reading, but there was absolutely no reason as to why the rioting and the looting and the violence started and escalated by this black community in 1964. Now, you mentioned gangs, the proliferation of gangs and the history of gangs, but let me just make a small correction to that. The reason why I posted that article is because I wanted to actually do a comparison, not so much of gangs back then and gangs today, but particularly the black community, how in our black communities in Patterson, nothing much has changed from that 1964 article to the 2014 articles that I'm reading on my Facebook news pages. And it just baffled me because we have these discussions constantly all the time. You have left wingers, you have right wingers. The left wingers, of course, are saying, well, it's the environment that they're brought up in. It's the lack of funds, the lack of jobs, the lack of education, the poor white man structure that's put upon these people. And then, of course, you have the right-wingers who are saying, basically, no, these people are making their own personal choices. They don't want jobs. They don't want education. So where's the middle ground there? You know, you got from 1964, we got this violence happening in our black community, and it hasn't stopped. It hasn't ceased all the way up until 2014, where I can still pull articles about, you know, black-on-black violence and the proliferation of violence in general in the black community.
Well, you know, Lamont, and you make an excellent point. Now, we talked 1964 was 50 years ago. Exactly.
Yes.
50 years ago. So we're talking that 50 years ago, nothing has changed in regards to gangs in the city of Patterson and probably in a lot of other places, Lamont, because gang, you know, warfare is going on all across America. 50 years and nothing has changed. Now, I was reading an article, Patricia, you can chime in on this when you want. I was reading an article just a few minutes ago, Lamont, about it was from the editorial in the North Jersey. I think it was either the News, the Record, or the Herald News, and they talked about the same thing. The Record, the gangs of Patterson. This is what they're talking about, and what they're saying is basically that. Well, but 50 years ago, the only thing that has changed about gangs is, you know, guns going from bats and sticks and knives to guns. That's the only thing that's actually changed. And the gangs have actually gotten deadlier, as evidenced by the shooting of the young girl, Rincon, by the last name of Rincon, and now just the zero above just a week or so ago. And then on top of that, now here we go. With Irvington, now you're not even safe in your own household now. In Irvington, I'm sure you heard about it, Lamont and Patricia as well, that a baby, 15 months old, killed in the house by a stray bullet that came in from outside. Just the most outrageous, you know, scenario you could think of. You're not even safe in your own homes now.
Similar shooting happened not too long ago right here on North 7th Street where a bullet was found right below a child's bed. Fortunately, it didn't hit him, and, you know, it made some news coverage here. Like you said, it just shows you the difference is that back then, like the article stated in 1964, they would make these pipe bombs, these Molotov cocktails, and throw them at cops, and they would terrorize people on buses and smash car windows. Today, like you said, they've elevated to guns, and, you know, it's almost a heartless view of humanity. Actually, they lack humanity, these people, and it's like they don't care who gets caught in the crossfire.
Yeah, because there was a story of a woman in Newark, a grandmother who was walking her grandson, 4 or 5 years old, walking her grandson down the street, when lo and behold, gunfire breaks out, and now the one clown who was shooting at the other one had two guns, not one. Now, I'm a licensed firearm. I'm licensed to own firearms as well as carry them, and I know how hard it is to shoot one gun, you know, but this fool must have watched an episode of Bad Boys 2 or something, and he has two guns shooting.
Wow.
Shooting the two, and it's hard enough to shoot one in your good hand. It's difficult to shoot, especially the high power weapons we had, handguns we have today. And he had two of them, and so luckily for the grandmother, she was only grazed in the leg, but she had to put the baby on the ground and lay on top of it to protect it from. I mean, just that's just heartbreaking to hear, and I'm so sick of these Facebook people. And others on social media blaming the white man and, you know, who's bringing the guns in, who's bringing the drugs in. Stop the nonsense. I'm so sick of hearing that. Willie Lynch and all this stuff. Look, we know what the problems were. We know what the problem is. I mean, stop it, because it's never going to stop, Lamont and Patricia. It's never going to stop unless we stop it.
Yeah. And how do we do that? And I think that we have to begin to address that. As you have young people that are having shootouts over turf, you know, up the hill, down the hill, the north side, the east side, that are killing each other. And a lot of them relatively at a very young age.
So, you know, what is the solution for that? How do we begin to address and put some type of intervention, prevention in place to help to save young people from themselves? You know, for instance, in the city of Patterson, you know, right now, of course, they have identified 15 hot spots, you know, high crime areas, and they are ordering an ordinance was passed, you know, for businesses to close by midnight. In the city of Patterson alone, you have 256 liquor stores, five times greater than what it should be based upon the population. So, you know, alcohol is a drug. It's certainly mood mind altering. You get a person who already lacks, you know, guidance and direction, who's already angry, and the trauma, I think, also that comes from living in those distressed communities where you're hearing sirens, where you're hearing shootings, where, you know, drug activity is going on. What are some of the things that we can begin to put in place to help to save our young people from themselves?
Well, we don't take a break. Hold on. Yeah. We'll take a hold your thought. Hold your thought, Lamont and Patricia. Just hold on a second. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come right back with more. It's the Ron Kelly Show, and it's on Blog Talk Radio. It's the Ron Kelly Show. It's the Ron Kelly Show, and it's on blogtalkradio.com.
The Ron Kelly Show on blogtalkradio.com and on the web, theronkellyshow.com.
Hi, I'm Lisa Edelstein. Every day on set, I help my fictional doctors save the lives of imaginary patients in the TV series House. Every day in his village in Ethiopia, Barasa Ware helps save the lives of real children as a local health worker. Like many children in the developing world, the ones in Barasa's village are threatened by common illnesses that kill millions worldwide. But unlike villages without a local health worker, the children of Barasa's village get the care they need to survive. Imagine how many more children could be saved with your help. When you help local health workers like Barasa, you help children survive all over the world. See where the good goes at goodgoes.org and find out all the ways you can help the good go further. Brought to you by Save the Children and the Ad Council.
Now, back with more of the fastest growing internet radio show on the World Wide Web.
And it's on. It's go time.
The Ron Kelly Show. And on the web, theronkellyshow.com.
Absolutely, yes, indeed, for a Sunday morning. It feels so weird after being on the radio for Friday. On Fridays, it's 4 o'clock for so long. But anyway, we're back here Sunday mornings, The Ron Kelly Show, 10 a.m. on blogtalkradio.com. So write it down. Don't forget, tell a friend, The Ron Kelly Show on blogtalkradio.com. And, you know, I just want to say both of you. Now, I was in the laundromat the other day, and I watched a little kid. And I'm going to segue into my very quickly. I watched a little kid. He was running around. He was about 2 or 3 years old, just barely walking, running around, creating havoc, running amok inside the laundromat, pushing carts around, et cetera, et cetera. So the mother picks him up and puts him in the carriage, and he has a fit, screaming, yelling, you know, contorting his body like he was having an epileptic fit, and she took him out of the carriage, and he went right back to what he was doing. And my point is that these kids know, even at that age, how to manipulate people. They know. So my point is, Lamont and Patricia, we can't wait until the kid gets 7, 8, 9, 10 to try to breathe. We have to start virtually from the time they pop out of the womb. We have to start training them, getting their minds right even back then, because they say that those years, those early years between 3, 5, 7 years old, are the most formative years of a child. And that's where we have to get them. We can't wait until BET gets a hold of them and and you know, rap music and everything like that. Not that I'm blaming that, but we need to get our kids early. Thoughts.
Well, you're right. Cognitive development definitely stabilizes more between the ages of 3 and 4. In fact, that's where they begin to learn moral judgment. And many children have what we call rigid moral judgment as youngsters once they're taught right from wrong. Typically, they take the side of the right. Even if they see their parents doing something remotely wrong, they will call their parent out. But here's the problem with parenting, especially in the minority inner cities, Ron. Many of the people having these children should not be parents themselves. You see, they don't have the utilities, the correct cognitive abilities themselves to raise a child. What they did, 9 out of 10, was they laid down with someone who they knew wasn't a good father, wasn't a father figure. That person, that man, went on and impregnated other women, and now you have multiple baby fathers. And, you know, a lot of these girls are teenagers themselves, you know, probably didn't have great upbringing themselves. So what can they really teach these children? I would like to start with teaching young black and Hispanic women that their body truly are their temple. They don't have to lay down with someone that they know is not going to have a job tomorrow, is not going to be a good father, that someone they know already has children with. 12 other women or so. I'm exaggerating, but
you're not. Look at the. No, you're not, Lamont. Look at. I'm sorry, Lamont. No, you're not. Look at the cops of 34 kids that was on Elania the other day. Elania, Yanla, whatever. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, but that's the exception to the rule.
Yeah,
there's probably a whole bunch of jokers running around with multiple kids. Go ahead, Lamont. Finish. Go ahead, Lamont. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just gonna say it starts with themselves. If they know full well that they don't have a job themselves, they're living in an inner city where crime is just popping off constantly, the one question you have to ask yourself is, do I want to bring a child into this particular world, into this particular society that I'm living in? Unfortunately, no one's asking that question. So they bring the child into the world. There's other options, of course. There's social services. You can give the child up, but for whatever reason, they don't do that either. I guess they feel this baby is my property, therefore it belongs to me. The hell with the state. I'm going to take care of my own child. Of course, that child gets neglected because the mother doesn't have all the necessary means to raise it properly. So then who begins raising it? Peers in the streets. You know, people with bad influences, people with negative intentions. And so that's why I believe we're seeing 16, 17-year-olds pulling guns, robbing people, and then it turns into what? As I stated before, when we talked about crime in the black community on a past show, Ron, it turns into an accepted culture. I have to rob this person because that's the culture around here. Who doesn't rob somebody for something that they want? And that's exactly what. Yeah, and that's
right.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Lamont.
That's something
go
that
ahead,
gets
Lamont.
Passed on to everybody else by way of peer pressure.
You see, that's the thing.
Think,
you know, good is bad. Hold on, Patricia. I want to pose something to you. Patricia, good, great points, Lamont. Good is bad and bad is good. But now, Patricia, Lamont talked about, you know, children being born to mothers who are not capable of raising a child because they haven't been raised properly themselves and or they're too young to be having a kid in the first place. Now, I talked to someone the other day, a lady friend of mine, who was complaining about her son's father, who was 46 years old and still lived with his mother and is irresponsible. So I said to her, I said, you know, one thing I can't understand is why do women have children from guys who they know are irresponsible, lazy, shiftless, and don't want to do nothing with themselves? And she said, well, you know, she says, well, I thought it would change them. So I'm glad that you're here, Patricia, address that. Now, I'm not asserting that you did anything like that, but what is the logic behind that?
Well, I think, again, that and I want to aim more towards...
As a woman, what is the logic behind
solution.
That? Right, but nobody...
I'm
going to
aim
more... No, wait now. What is the logic... As a woman, you're... As
what is
a
the
woman,
logic for
are,
someone choosing to sleep with someone who is not responsible or accountable?
And she says what she said was that, and see if that's how.
But
a lot
the
of
bottom line is what
born.
She's saying is that person is not being, has not been
responsible or accountable. So
right.
I think, again, that we have to talk about building self-esteem. I think, again, we have to talk about teaching people that they are holding themselves in of high value. I think, again, that we have to talk about helping people to understand that the greatest investment that they can make is the investment that they make in themselves, and that people will enter their lives and people will exit their lives, but they will always be with them. So, you know, why someone chooses, male or female, to sleep with whomever they sleep with, I don't think that people necessarily go out and say, I want to get pregnant. I think a lot of times, you know, people are just in the moment, and it's not about being responsible or accountable. It's just about, you know, feeling a feeling or feeling
right,
a void or
right,
feeling that thing that's missing.
Okay, but she made a conscious decision to have a child. And going back to what Lamont was saying, in a way, she made a conscious decision to have a child. Everyone, I'm sorry, 347-426-3214. The phone number here, 347-426-3214. She made a conscious decision to have a child because she thought it would change the boyfriend from being irresponsible to being responsible. And I've heard that
Fantasy is real. Fantasy is real. You know, fantasy is real. You know, you grow up, you know, thinking, male and female, you know, thinking I'm going to connect with Mrs. Wright or Mr. Wright, you know, and I'm going to live happily ever after. It is a fantasy, and it's a matter of separating fantasy from reality, you know. But I think, again, that you have to build one's self-esteem. You have to help one to have a positive self-image. And one of the things that Lamont stated with young people having babies, I think that if you can go back to the 80s, for instance, particularly, and we're talking about in distressed communities, you know,
Lamont was born in the 80s, I believe.
1979.
In inner city, where you have...
Okay. I grew up in the 80s, though.
Okay, but where you have drugs running rampant, you know, where cocaine and freebase and crack, you know, is at an epic all-time high. And so even some of the children that you see today in those communities, you know, are the product of one parent or both parents having substance abuse issues. You know,
yep.
So I think that's another
yeah,
thing that you
yeah,
have to
yeah.
bring into the equation now, because that's when it was at its peak. You know, and people are having children where drugs came on the scene and you know, caused a lot of harm. And so I think you're still seeing some of the effects of that. So, but I think also that we have to deal with the whole family structure. You know, how are you able to bring parents in and begin to talk to them regarding improving the quality of life for them? You know, going into the schools, as you just said, Ron, in you know, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, prior to children transitioning into high school with preventive measures. You know,
no,
so I just
I would
think
say before they even get to the kindergarten, Patricia. I would say my point was before they even got, I'm sorry, because before they even get into kindergarten, not even forget about it, because 7th, 6th, 7th, 8th grade is too late. The horse has already left the barn. I think that, and Lamont, I don't know if you would agree with that. Patricia, you can go on your comment. But, you know, I think that early on, very, very, very early on, 2 years old, 3 years old, 4 years old, we should be getting to them.
Well, yes, we need to get to them as early as we can. But, you know, when you talk about and helping people to understand that simply because they made a bad decision or a stream of unhealthy decisions, you know, helping them to turn the corner on that, helping them to turn the corner that they're more than a bad decision. And just because you chose, you know, whatever you chose that brought this result does not mean that there is not help for you, that there is not hope for you. You know, so how do we begin, you know, to begin to mentor parents, to begin to mentor young people beginning to build self-esteem to help with conflict resolution, that you don't have to go straight to the gun or whatever the weapon is when there is a conflict, that there is another way to handle that. But I think, particularly in inner city, in distressed communities, that drugs is part of the core of that.
That's where the money's coming from. You know, that they see the drugs as their meal ticket. In other words, you know, why work at a fast food restaurant for minimum wage or anywhere else when I can make what I would be making there in an entire month in one night? The drugs.
Oh, well, no, I'm not talking about drugs being their meal ticket.
He has a point,
I'm talking about their drug users, their alcoholic users. So your mindset has already been altered from that. And I'm talking about when you're in a community where you're flooded with that. So you're not making sound decisions. So, you know, we're not even talking about, you know, the $5 and $10 drug dealer, because that's a short-lived life. I'm talking about what brings you to that point.
Well, I think that the drug dealer is the one that's shooting up the neighborhood, you know. In addition to shooting up the neighborhood, he's also getting that person on the block over there strung out. You know, Ron spoke about drugs coming into the community. You spoke about that as well. A lot of people have blamed that on the white man. There's a movie I just saw yesterday called Kill the Messenger, very controversial movie, and it deals with the fact that although the CIA did know that drugs were coming into the inner cities, they weren't the ones peddling it in. It was actually Nicaraguans, you know, Latin American people that brought it in. And who purchased it from the Latin Americans? Black people. And then those black people then sold it to their own community. So, you know, it's, you said the right word before when you said this. You said choice. These people are choosing to do something. And to answer your question, Ron, I don't think it's ever too late to change someone. Yes. You'd have a better opportunity pumping something into the head and the mental states of children at the ages of 3 and 4. But there's nothing to say that they can't change when they become seniors, although it's hard to do that, you know, because clearly they've got a pure case of autonomy going on where they feel, we don't want any parental guidance here. I got this. I can do this. Especially combined with peer pressure, you know, they're, like you said, they're just like a horse out of the stable. But education is another key. Aside from young ladies laying down with men who they know have five different other baby mamas, let's say they bring the child into the world, going through the school system and so on and so forth, educating these people in these poor communities about the options that they do have. A lot of people use the excuse of, well, I'm too poor to go to college. I mentioned on our last show, Ron, when we talked about black-on-black crime in the black community, that it is the poor people who benefit most. I mean, there are Pell Grants that will send you to college free of charge. You know, sit down with these people. Sit down with these youngsters and say, what do you want to do? What are you interested in doing out there? You know?
Let me ask you both a question. Thank you, Lamar. Let me ask you both a question, you and Patricia Wilder. Now, is it... Okay, now we know what the problems are. There's a multitude, a myriad of problems that we have in the black community. Now, has the horse left the barn? I mean, is it too late to close the door because A, is it so ingrained in our psyche in the black community that there's just no way out of it? Or B, that the disconnect amongst black folks and our lack of the ability to come together singularly for a purpose is a bigger problem, which, guys, speak to that, Patricia.
Well, I don't think it's ever too late. You know, I think the time is always ripe to do the right thing. In terms to us coming together in a common bond to address the ills that are happening in our community, you know, I think that's happening more right now. I think that when you look at the number of young people that have lost their lives, particularly, I'm going to speak to the city of Patterson, you know, you have 12-year-olds, 14-year-olds, 16, 19-year-olds, you have young people that are losing their life at an alarming rate. I think that that happens to be the catalyst or the springboard to bring us together in unity, all hands on deck, to begin to address. See, because silence is consent, you know. And sometimes people think that it, because it hasn't happened to them, you know, it's happening to my neighbor, it's happening to the person around the corner, you know, they separate themselves. But at this rate, as you hear about shootings after shootings, I think it is becoming the springboard for all folks to come together, from elected officials to community leaders, to community members, to the churches, to all people to come together, from the schools, you know, from the police force, all to come together to help to intervene into the loss of life that's happening in the community.
All right, what do you say, Lamont?
Ron, I say it's a combination of both. Just like the science of psychology, there's nature and nurture. There's a combination of both. These people have accepted a culture that says, by any means necessary, I'm going to get what I want, even if it means shooting up my own black community and my own black people. So number one, you got the love of money, you know, and the means to do anything to get it. And this is a culture that they've accepted. And number two, you got a disconnect between coming together with their black peers and putting a solution together to fix up their own communities. Instead, they're shooting at each other. So it's a bit of both, I'd say.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll take a quick break, everybody. I'm being joined by Lamont Gates, the Unflappable One, the host of Real Social Talk on blogtalkradio.com, and also Pat Wilder, my former co-host on Ron Kelly Morning Show back in the day. We'll be right back in just a moment with more. It's the Ron Kelly Show, and it's on blogtalkradio.com.
There was a need in talk radio, and one man will fill that need.
What kind of effectiveness is marching out of society today?
And you too can be a witness. The Ron Kelly Show on YourTalkRadio.com.
Some statistics are surprising. Some are unbelievable. And some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%. And that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Oh no! I'm in charge of our 10-year class reunion and don't know where to begin.
Don't let this happen to you. For your next event, wedding, anniversary, class reunion, or just need to promote your business, Burkett Promotions has you covered.
BurkettPromotions.com.
Over 200 custom-made products USA made, along with personalized imprints and logos.
BurkettPromotions.com.
Burkett Promotions does it all. Big or small, we can fit your budget.
BurkettPromotions.com.
Need your event to stand out with that personalized touch? Pens, pencils, t-shirts? Go to BurkettPromotions.com.
BurkettPromotions.com.
Mention the Ron Kelly Show and receive an additional 10% off an already great price.
Thanks to Burkett Promotions, my event was a success.
BurkettPromotions.com. BIRKETT Promotions.com.
BurkettPromotions.com.
A business you can trust. A member of the Better Business Bureau, New Jersey. A-plus rating.
Now, back with more. Of the fastest growing internet radio show on the World Wide Web.
And it's on. It's go time.
The Ron Kelly Show. And on the web, theronkellyshow.com.
Yes, indeed, it's the Ron Kelly Show, Sunday morning. Write it down. Tell a friend, Sunday morning, on new time, day and time, Sunday morning, 10 p.m., 10 a.m., I should say. a little late for me. 10 a.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com. I'm joined by Lamont Gates, you know, 501, and of course, Patricia Wilder, my former co-host with Deron Kelly, morning show. All right, as promised, I want to talk a little bit about, thank you guys for your input on that. And I guess it's kind of like a segue, because Newark is, you know, the fast becoming the crime capital of America. I mean, at one time, there was a low in the, because there was a low during the Sharpe-James administration, sort of a low in the number one status of Newark, but it's fast becoming that again. And now we have Ros Baraka, who was recently voted in as mayor of Newark. And thank you to Shafar Jeffries, who was his closest challengers, chief challenger, who lost narrowly to Ros Baraka. And there's folks on Facebook now that are just folks on Facebook who are just incensed that Ros Baraka has become mayor and are bombarding him with negative commentary every day. But as promised, I wanted to talk a little bit, guys, about the first 100 days of Barack Obama, Mayor Ros Baraka's mayoralty. And I'll start with you, Lamont. I don't think 100 days is a fair, I think this should be maybe the first year or so. I don't think there's time to do anything in 100 days. What are your thoughts?
You took the words right out of my mouth. I think even for a president of the United States, I mean, what are you really going to accomplish in 100 days? I mean, Cory Booker had Newark, and of course, he vowed to take crime away and vowed to do this and vowed to do that. And it took him years, and Newark is still not in the good shape that Cory Booker envisioned. Ros Baraka, I know he has things that he wants to do, one of which is he wants to take the public schools back from the state and have it back under the city's control. He, of course, wants to lower crime. He wants to go into some sort of ceasefire program that they have going up in Boston, and there's a number of things that he wants to do that just half of it won't even be done in 100 days. I even doubt that a lot of this stuff will be done in the first 3 years, possibly 4 years of his administration. So I agree with you. 100 days is just too short of a number to put a measure on what someone's accomplished, especially in a city like Newark.
Yeah, and Patricia, I'll ask you now, do you think that, and Lamont, I'll come back to you in just a second, do you think, now, because we're talking about, you know, someone said we have the Messiah mentality amongst the black community, where we want to vote someone in and expect them to sweep all our problems away. So do you think that, you know, we're being paralyzed by this Messiah mentality and it's preventing us from going out and doing what we need to do?
Yeah, I think that if anyone thinks that within 100 days that you can bring effective change to the city of Newark, you know, again, I think it's back to a fantasy land. You know, the setting the stage and making some changes, it's going to take time. And so if it's that Messiah, that one person is going to come and save the day, you know, and make all things right, it's not going to happen. It's no way possible. You know, you talked about the president, the mayor, to the council person. Who gets an office in 100 days and you have the layers of issues that have been in place for however long they've been in place? You know, so I think it's just unrealistic. You know, and it's the difference. It's wishful thinking to think that that can occur.
Well, you know, Lamont, I'll come back. Yeah, I'll speak. I'll propose this to both of you. But first, let me say, Lamont, that apparently Mr. Baraka does think he has accomplished something, because he is actually right now putting together a documentary touting his accomplishments of the first 100 days. So I think that he actually thinks that he was able to do something. But now, are we talking about, we can't legislate morality, first of all. You know, like there was an ordinance in Patterson at one time proposed by the councilman in the first ward, Anthony Davis, to proposal to make people put their pants up. You know, Now, you can't legislate morality. You can't use a political process to put people in line. You can use the law enforcement process to put people in line, but you can't use the political process. So, I mean, is it, are we talking about an impossibility here, Lamont, where we're trying to use, we need to change a mindset of a people, and there's no way to do that legislatively?
No. What's your full question? Are you talking about someone sagging their pants and making a law against sagging pants?
No, my question, Lamont, I'm sorry if I confused you. My point is that you can't, do you think that we're trying to legislate morality, stop people from stealing and all of that, but with legislatively, I mean, there's no way, that, I don't believe there's no way that a mayor can come in and change a mindset of a people.
Not at all. That's why these people are called lawbreakers. They are breaking the law because of their moral mindsets, as you said, their poor sense of moral judgment. These people are disobedient. They don't respect authority, and they believe they can get away with it under the authority's nose. So absolutely not. If you're going to pass a law that says, you know, I don't know what law you can pass that says, you know, be a moral person. All you can do is pass laws that say, you know, this is what we set as a regulation, you know, as a statute that says the law states this and that, and you either abide that or you don't abide by it, but you're not necessarily going to change anyone's mind on being a criminal if they don't want their minds changed.
Right, and see, in the reality of it, you know, I hate to have to say this, but the reality of it, Lamont and Patricia, is there are a lot of folks on Broadway, for example, the city of Patterson's, you know, Broadway Market in Newark and so many other different places, Jackson Avenue in Jersey City, et cetera, et cetera. There are a lot of people out here who really don't want anything. I mean, come on, let's cut to the chase here. There are folks out here hold on, Patricia. There are people out here who just don't want anything because you're not going to get anything standing in front of the liquor store. You're not going to get anything standing on the corner. You have to go and find it. And I say to you both that I believe there are people out here who just don't want to do the right thing. And they talk about giving jobs in the black community. Some people don't want to work. They don't want to work. They don't want to work hard. They don't want to really do nothing. They just want to live off the dole and get a check every month. It's a reality, Patricia, whether you agree with me or not.
Who grows
stand
up
by that.
Saying, I want to be nothing? Who grows up saying, I want to be a bum? Who grows up saying, I want to become a drug addict? Who grows up saying, I want to become a mass murderer? Who grows up saying that?
Black folks don't Black folks are not, black folks traditionally are not mass murderers. But Patricia, what I'm saying is people, I mean, I'm not saying that they, as a little kid, what do you want to be when you grow up? Well, I want to be a bum. I want to stand on the corner. I want to be an alcoholic. No, I'm not saying that. But
so there is something
there
that occurs.
But there are people who are just, people who just don't want to do the right thing, Patricia. And if you give them a job, they may not keep it. If you give them a place, they may not pay the rent. If you give them everything they need, they may toss it away. There are people in the black community who just don't want anything, period, or just not willing to work hard for it. We want microwave success. You know, you want to have like a Keurig where you just put the little capsule in the thing and the coffee comes out 30 seconds later. People don't want to, you know, people don't want to work hard and do the right thing in the black community. There are folks who, I'm not saying the entire black community, but I'm saying there are folks who don't want nothing, Patricia.
Well,
Lamont,
I think in the best of us, there's some bad, and in the worst of us, there's some good. So I know many of success stories, you know, of people who have raised their consciousness, who have turned their lives around, you know, and I'm not saying that it's not challenging and you need to have a support system in place to help you to do that. You know, that if you're surrounding yourself with people who are just doing what they're doing, you know, so I think one is empathy, it connects a ladder out to let people know when you look at us really as a people and what we have gone through as a people, from all the horrific things that we have experienced, and yet, to some degree, to a lot, in fact,
that we have rose above it. So are you living in tough times? You know, have people become hopeless? You know, do they just think, this is my lot in life, and I just have to be this, and I just have to do this? And, you know, is mental health an issue that we begin to look at? Trauma that people have experienced, an issue that we begin to look at, that all contributes to people making certain decisions or to just believing that there is no help for me. Like, this is all I'm seeing.
No, I'm not saying that, but there are folks out who just don't want to do anything. Speak to Lamont, where are you? Lamont Gates.
Yeah,
Speak to that.
Yeah,
Lamont.
Well, again, it goes back to my theory of peer pressure and culture. And this culture of I'm going to get what I want, any means necessary, even if it means using violence, I'm going to get that money. Yes, what she said is correct. There are good and bad in all races. However, statistics don't lie. There's a reason why violent crimes and many crimes in general are proliferated more in the black community than any other community in this country. It's because we have accepted a certain culture that says I'd rather do this than go to school and get a college degree. A lot of that is promoted by peer pressure as well.
Right. And those people that are in their right, stable mind?
I would say, yeah, they're in their right mind.
Are you serious?
They make conscious decisions to do what they do.
Listen,
they make a conscious decision. I'm not going to look for a job today. No, I'm saying, Patricia, they make a conscious decision to do what they do, to make a conscious decision to not look for a job today. Oh, I'll go tomorrow. Oh, it's raining.
You know,
oh,
you want to talk about statistics. You want to talk about statistics? Look at the drugs that are in the black community. Look at the number of people that are on drugs.
We are three black people who don't use drugs, Patricia. We are three black people who don't use drugs and have chosen not to use drugs. The three of us, African Americans, who have lived in and around drugs,
we don't use them.
We made a choice. We made a conscious decision not to use them. And folks, when they go cop, they've made a decision to go cop.
But when you're looking at gang activity and you're looking at shootings and you're looking at killings and you're looking at people who, you know, are just, you know, doing destructive acts, those people are being affected. I'm not saying that they're not pulling the trigger, but I'm saying that those are not people that are in their sane mind.
Well, they're the same
people.
Those are people that are drinking.
Those are people that are drunk.
And those same people, Patricia, are the ones that are staying on the corners, getting high, using drugs, as Lamont alluded to earlier, but I'll piggyback on that to say these same people who are out there standing on the corners, et cetera, their kids are out somewhere in the neighborhood running amok, joining gangs, and these gangs, the membership is being fueled by kids who have drug-addicted parents, who come from exigent circumstances, and who are influenced, as Lamont said, by the peer pressure. Bad is good and good is bad. If you get an A, you know, you're a snitch or a turncoat or a traitor. If you quit school, you're down. You know,
yeah,
what
but
I mean?
Dr. Javon, what's happening?
Well, I think a question for Patricia I would have to ask is you're playing on the insanity card here for these people who pull triggers and go out there and you know, commit these violent acts in our communities. My real question for you is, do you believe that they know right from wrong?
Right,
I'm not playing the insanity card, for one. Let me first and foremost say that. But I'm saying that when you have young people that are 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 years old, 18 years old, committing the crimes that we are seeing, those are not people that are in a healthy mindset. You know,
so
those
you believe
are people
that they don't know wrong. They don't know right from wrong then. A person in an unhealthy mindset wouldn't know right from wrong. I would say that about someone who is maybe schizophrenic or suffers from
someone
with a problem, right. someone with a problem.
Well, I'm saying that you have to, the power of influence is real. And if you're not dealing with the trauma, if you're not in those communities, if you have not grown up in those communities, if you have not seen, like, I lived in the city of Patterson. I remember being 14, 15, 16 years old. I remember wanting to feel a part of. I remember the peer pressure and the power of influence and willing to abandon myself in order to be down with the crew. I remember that. I don't know how it was for you when you were 14, 15, 16 years old.
Well, we're all
influenced,
but I remember
peer pressure.
We all know, we all have choices and know right from wrong. I think that's the key question I was asking.
Yeah, that's right, and We do know right from wrong, and if the person is, you know, even if
not know right from wrong. I'm talking about that you have to look at the contributing factors to people making poor decisions.
We're there, and, you know, we've
seen we understand
people live in those same communities that come out of that. So why so many of our black community are still choosing to do it is, you know,
I think young people can really be a part of the solution opposed to part of the problem, but it is going to take a whole community to help.
Like Ron said, working together, which a lot of them don't want to do.
That's right. We're so busy fighting over who's going to be in charge that we can't that we can't come together because we fight over who's going to be in charge. Guys, I believe it. There, we're out of time. We've run out of time. But we're still recording. So thank you, Lamont Gates, Real Social Talk, and veteran Pat Wilder, and we'll thank you guys so much. And you're welcome to come back in the program anytime. Thank you, you guys, for your taking of the show this Sunday morning. Thank you so much. All right, everybody, we're out of here. We'll be back here next week with another edition of the Ron Kelly Show. So until then, everybody, it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice, and that we may not have it all together, but together we can certainly have it all. Thank you so much, and go Cowboys.